Hello and welcome to Tools in the Shed, a podcast powered by Cars Guide, ready to rip into car stuff that has caught our eye this week. I'm Cars Guide Deputy Editor James, and with me is staff journalist Tom.
Hello.
And key contributor Byron.
Hello.
This week we're discussing this year's Geneva Motor Show, which isn't happening, but is. And we've got the greatest hits, so stand by for that. We'll look at three entries to the Cars Guide garage from the past week, and we'll catch up with a man who needs to sort out rat rods of a distinctly different kind in this week's Muskwatch. Remember, you can jump ahead courtesy of the time codes in the notes below, and you can click on the chapter markers in the timeline. So let's go. And first of all, virtual Geneva. So this time last year, the 2020 Geneva Motor Show ended up being cancelled because it was on the leading edge of the coronavirus's spread through Europe. And things, unfortunately, have not improved to the point where it can be held physically. But a whole bunch of launches of new product have kind of coalesced around this time. So it's become a virtual Geneva, really. And Byron, you've been looking into this, and there are more than half a dozen quite significant cars that we can talk about that we'd normally be seeing on glamorous spinning turntables under hot lights.
Yeah, that's right, James. And you know, maybe it's a portent to what's going to happen in the future. Maybe it's going to be all virtual, but which would be a shame because the Geneva Motor Show is such a significant event. It's pretty much the premier European motor show that's on every year, as opposed to the Frankfurt and Paris shows, which were on alternate years.
Alternate years, yes.
Yeah, that's right. And a lot of, I guess it's pretty famous for being a designer, like a design-driven show, wouldn't you say, boys?
Absolutely. I mean, you've got Pininfarina, Bertone, various others. They traditionally use Geneva as their launching point for something exotic and leading edge and game changing and all of that kind of stuff and fun
and exactly and that's why I guess Hyundai had chosen the Geneva show to show its future vision of mobility electrification mobility in the shape of the Ioniq brand and more specifically the absolutely in my opinion breathtaking Ioniq 5. What do you think, boys? There's an attractive car for you, isn't there?
What do you think, Tom?
It's awesome. It breaks the mold of what this kind of weird, giant hatch SUV sort of thing is. And it looks to the past, but not blatantly so. Like, it's not as though it's referencing something so deliberately and so pointedly. It's its own design. But there's just elements of the past, like elements of the 80s in there. And somebody the other day compared it to the Lancia Delta from the 90s, which I love as well.
Yeah,
very much so. James, do you?
It's beautiful. I think it's almost something like out of a science fiction film, but it looks eminently drivable right now. You know, it's brought a real freshness, irrespective of what's under the sheet metal. It's just a beautiful car.
Yeah, yeah. I reckon this car is going to be the Hyundai brand's Datsun 1600 moment, where they finally, I know they've had massive success, but this is an era-defining move, I think. And people are going to look back and go, wow, this car has it all. It's the reason to absolutely abandon internal combustion engines and embrace electrification and that sort of technology in a way that they probably would not have considered. So I can't wait to see that car on our roads. And it's only
true.
And it's what, August, September is when it's coming?
Is that right?
Yeah.
I've already seen one in camouflage driving around Northern Sydney.
But hold on, Tom, it was in camouflage.
Yeah, I couldn't see it. There was an aura.
You felt it.
Yes, you felt something wafting past.
It is kicking around in Australia, and as we know, Hyundai also do a local suspension tune, and the platform for that car is really, really interesting. They did a big sort of press conference on it a little while ago, and it's really scalable and movable, and they said they're very excited about the potential for unconventional designs that they can put on it as
fantastic.
So
fantastic.
Cool stuff coming out of Hyundai in the future, I think.
And it, you know, electrification, as it has been in Europe for some time, is a pretty strong theme. And there were others, Byron.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you'd be nuts not to have that as your driving force, so to speak. Yeah. And another interesting car, and one for me that came out of the blue, is the Volvo C40 Recharge.
Recharge.
And that's right. Yeah. That's Volvo's moniker for their full electrification, battery electric vehicle, vehicles moving forward. And the C40, it references, like the Hyundai, which references the 1975 Pony, which was a Jindaro design, which of course harks back to my point about why Geneva was chosen. This car, the C40, references the 2007 C30 Coupe, which itself references the
P1800.
That's right.
Correct. The rear glass, the whole thing, it was really nicely done. And this one's nicely done too.
Yeah, it's more a lighting element, I guess, with the shape of the taillights.
Yeah.
But it's basically a short, sleek roofed version of the XC40, which is one of the best of that premium.
And there's an XC40 Recharge as well.
Yeah, so we're getting that in June. This car hasn't been confirmed for Australia yet, but I think it's it's a certainty. You know, since it's going to be the one of the Glamour Recharge models, and we may see it as early as 2022.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but part of the deal here is that there's an infotainment or multimedia system that's been jointly developed with Google, and it's pretty much exclusively on the Android operating system, but pretty slick.
Yep.
Yeah. I did the virtual thing. It was like, held at 1 a.m. or some such. I wasn't actually expecting them to reveal a car because it was very vague. They were like, oh, there's a Recharge experience happening and dial in at this time. So I did that. And then they're like, oh, there's a whole car. And I really didn't expect that. I thought they were just going to talk about their plan to go full electric by 2030. But there you go.
Did you jump at that chance when you thought 1 a.m. Recharge experience? I'm joining.
It sounds like a nightclub. Recharge.
I think Boss Man Mal Flynn, I think he referred to me as a semi-reformed night owl, whatever that means. Anyway.
Oh, he can talk.
But, the car uses it looks sort of similar to what they've got now, but it's a redesigned version of their operating system, I suppose you could call it, and it's all integrated with Google services. Every car will come with a SIM card, so it's sort of like Tesla. It'll be this kind of like fully integrated experience, works with the dash cluster and the multimedia, the big portrait multimedia system they've got. And the one in the current car is fine. It's just a little bit, you know, laggy. It's also Android based. So I'm hoping that they can put a bit of a bigger processor in it and make it a little bit faster and slicker like the one in Tesla is. Because using a Tesla is like, that's like, you drive one of those and you go, oh, this is what multimedia in cars should be in 2021, you know? Like, it's fast, it's slick, it's effortlessly integrated. And I'm hoping it's like that. So that's quite exciting too.
Very good. Very good. And to continue the electric theme, Byron, e-tron, which is another sub-brand, but this time from Audi, and they've coughed up more product.
Oh, they certainly have. So this is basically the Porsche Taycan in drag, in four-ring drag.
Right.
To keep with the Mardi Gras theme this weekend, I guess. And there's no surprises here. We're talking about a high-performance Grand Tourer. Audi says that the big differences between it and the Taycan, besides the fact that they don't really share much sheet metal, is the Audi is a more of a long distance comfort orientated thing, while the Taycan, of course, prioritizes absolute performance.
Right.
Not to say that the GT doesn't go, because it, I think it manages a 3.7 to 100. So it's, no slouch. But so that's That was finally unveiled in production form after what must be one of the most protracted gestations of any car.
And Audi has been a bit of a special, talking about motor shows, of creating its own events. And they had their day of progress as they called it. And that was the unveiling or the launch point for this thing. And that's increasingly a thing with automotive brands, that they just want to do things irrespective of COVID, but they want to own it and not be one of many, but here's us doing our own thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, and why not? I mean, that motor show was also the jumping off point for the, well, it was meant to be the jumping off point for the new Mercedes C-Class, the W26. And I mean, that's a huge car that's, until recently, was the bread and butter car for Daimler.
Best-selling Merc globally over the last decade is the C-Class. That's their claim anyway.
Yeah. And now, of course, I mean, obviously, it's moved to the GLC. But and in Australia, the GLA or the A-Class base cars, like GLA and the CLA and the R.
No,
so you find it interesting that it seems to have just gone full Mini S-Class on the inside, the new C-Class.
How's the screen? Like we were saying, whoever says Tesla doesn't influence the industry is wrong, because that enormous screen inside the C-Class is a big clue.
And that, I mean, you know, super advanced efficiency, electrification, as you said by the screen, multimedia. I think it will solidify the C-Class's popularity and domination of that medium segment, which a lot of people are saying, you know, it's disappearing, it's becoming irrelevant. But, you know, when the C-Class is the second best-selling medium-sized car after the Camry in Australia.
Amazing. And it's a little bit, well, not a little bit, it's 65 millimetres longer and a bit wider and lower. All that creep in terms of its dimensions and the wheelbase is 25 millimetres longer. So they've got to have some headroom, so it'll be interesting to see what happens further up the line.
It's going to be like the size of an E-Class from just a few years ago now, right?
Well, look at BMW's X3, X5. You know, the X3 now is easily the size of the X5 when it arrived. So that kind of creep is a pretty common thing. Absolutely. But I think that screen and their multimedia means that the latest version of their MBUX operating system will be pretty spectacular, I imagine.
It's certainly something to look forward to. Yeah. As is, of course, the other German debutante, which is the ID. Buzz by Volkswagen, which is essentially a combi concept that we've seen in the past, but this one...
So many times,
I know. Yeah, the Germans really just want to make sure that we know it's coming, you know? This one was showing us the autonomous driving tech that this car espouses, and future Volkswagens as well. So I can't get enough of that car. I mean, I've sat in the concept in other motor shows, you know, when I was much younger, when it first debuted. I think it was a Detroit show when I first sat in that car.
Well, so there were two versions, weren't there? And they were both called Bulli initially, which is the nickname for combis in Germany and other places. And it was just so exciting because it was a beautiful reinterpretation of that whole concept. And you thought, bring it on. And it's been a long gestation. But this autonomous VW, bold claim, mark it down. They reckon it'll be ready for introduction for traffic use in 2025. So we should mark that down. That's a big, like, I think Volvo said they were going to have fully autonomous level 5 by 2018.
Yeah.
So that's another biggie, I think.
Yep, it is another biggie. And speaking of cars that start with B, the Hyundai, back to the Korean brand that seems to be the brand of the moment, Hyundai has also unveiled virtually the Bayon SUV.
Yep. Bayon. And at this stage, you know, it's the light SUV, isn't it? And allegedly exclusively European market. But we know in the past, like witness Palisade, no, it's never going to come here. Various other vehicles. So it could be. It's an interesting launch in that context.
That's right. So this is basically Hyundai's answer to the Volkswagen T-Cross and the Ford Puma and all those kind of B-segment-based, slightly premium, if not actual premium-priced, Euro-centric crossovers that the world just is going gaga for. It you know, it's got some very interesting design details. Thomas, I'm sure you've got a take on its looks.
It looks almost like an MPV from the rear. Like it's a bit less sort of cool coupe SUV than it is like practicality box, don't you reckon? Mm. It's quite different in terms of its design.
Hyundai is calling the design language that the Bayon expresses sensuous sportiness. So it's the sensuous sportiness design language.
Oh, car companies, they just keep coming out with this crap. I mean, this amazing stuff.
Seems rated a bit PG, doesn't it? Like, not quite G-rated.
Rated BS. So that car's based on the i20 Super Mini, which Hyundai, which we'll see, of course, a variation of as the N.
Yes, that's right, N only.
N only, which I can't wait for that one.
Yep. So, and apparently the interior owes a little bit to the i30. So you've got a mix and match. It's a kind of blending various things together.
Yep. And finally, one of my favourite, probably one of your favourite cars to debut at the Geneva Show is the V8 version of the...
Land Rover Defender.
That's right.
Land Rover Defender.
Yep.
What amazing. I mean... here we are talking about electrification, autonomy, and there's the Defender waving the flag for supercharged V8 power. We're talking 386 kilowatts supercharged 5-litre V8 in the Defender in both 90 and 110. And in Australia, stand by, hold your breath, it's going to be over $200,000. $205,500 for the 110 P525.
Take V8. My card. Take my card. Sign me up.
But it's bound to be a really fun machine.
Yeah. It just looks so good. And it continues to be, in my opinion, one of the best retro themed, but still progressive enough to be interesting takes on a classic model.
I don't know about you, Tom, when I've seen one on the road, it really is arresting. Like, oh, there's a Defender. I find myself, you know, it really stands out from the pack.
I find that when you see it close enough, from a distance, it looks like a Discovery 4. I saw one the other day and I was like, oh, man, that's a really clean looking Discovery 4. And the closer I got, I started to realize, oh, hang on a minute.
fair call. I really enjoy the design details, particularly around the taillights. I think the way they've treated the face of it is... super slick. They've done in my opinion, totally subjective as always, but I think they've done a great job. I love it. And with that V8 engine under the bonnet, it'll be heaps of fun.
I think the funny thing is when they first did that, like DC100, I think it was called, original concept, people hated it. And then the concept got so old that people forgot, and then they just released it as a production car.
Anyway, I was a fan of the DC100 when it was around. I thought, yep, if that's the way it goes, I'm all for it. But anyway.
Yeah, you're part of the DC universe, aren't you?
I am. A lesser character that's actually in the bin, yes, because I went straight off the drawing board into the bin. But, Geneva, centre of Europe, and it was also time for an announcement on car of the year, but European style. So this is a panel of people, journalists from across Europe. I think, here we go, I've got it, 59 members from 22 European countries, and they award points for various cars that have been released in the 12 months, and they came up with a winner, Byron.
That's right. So number two, I believe, was the Fiat E500, which is an electric version of the next generation Cinquecento, which we may or may not get.
That's such a beautiful one.
Yeah, but number one was or is a car that certainly has caused controversy, and of course that is the Toyota Yaris. Yes. Yeah. I don't believe the Yaris has had quite the price shock over there that it has had here.
Okay.
I think here it was pretty much... I wouldn't say artificially, but it was certainly like pile them high and sell them cheap.
In this most recent one, the entry level or the entry part of the range was just taken away. That doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm driving a Yaris at the moment, a base 6-speed manual, 3-pot.
Wow, nice one. Nice.
Actually loving it. It'll be on carsguide.com.au in a couple of weeks, a review, so look out for it there. But in the meantime, here's a picture of it because it's a very striking colour.
Okay.
Anyway, the Yaris wowed the European judges, and I mean that's quite a feat. You know, they tend to be Euro-centric, the European car of the year.
Yes.
And this follows in the footsteps of the original Yaris from 1999, which I think also won car of the year, or yes, certainly really? Right up there. Yes.
Okay.
I may be wrong. I'm pretty sure that was right up there. And yeah, the car is hybrid pretty much only for that market, and that's where the car, you know, scores its Cody kudos. You know, 3.3 liters per 100 kilometer average combined cycle. You know, a little over 2.5 in the urban run.
Amazing
sort of thing. Yeah. And you know, once you get past what the Yaris now has become, two things come to mind. One, it is really a brilliant car, but two, I reckon Toyota should have changed the name. If they had just changed the name to something else, even if they went back to Starlet or, you know, that sort of thing, or
what about the JDM name? Vitz?
Vitz, yeah. Putting on the Vitz. If they did that, people may have been a bit more receptive to it in Australia, but I'm glad it won Euro Car of the Year because it's a damn fine car.
Excellent. That's very good. So, there we go, a virtual Geneva show and a car of the year from Europe at the same time. It does pose that question about the future of motor shows. I mean, in days past, it was about people turning up and having a look at cars that they might not otherwise have a chance to see. I think the internet, the web has changed all of that. People can have a virtual view of whatever they want, experience configurators, go through the car in minute detail. And then the dealer experience is probably much better than it's ever been. So it's almost like the motor shows for consumers has been squeezed in the middle. They still have a role as a kind of megaphone for the launch of new product and concepts and what have you. But it seems as though that can be effectively done online as well. It's probably a pretty rocky path ahead, I've got to say, for international motor shows.
Yeah, let's hope that doesn't end up transpiring though, because you know, the reason why I'm here today is because I went to my first motor show when I was a primary school kid down here in Melbourne.
Yeah.
I felt like Charlie Bucket did when he entered the gates of Willy Wonka's factory. It was just,
The other thing is, just to talk shop for a sec, is as a journalist, it's a terrific opportunity to capture someone who's very senior in a car brand, who is not necessarily conscious of Australia's place in the globe. And you can put a question to them and extract some rather interesting information relevant to our market when they may not be aware. It's great just to speak to people in those businesses.
Very much so. I totally agree. It is a great opportunity to earn freak of flyer points. So please don't stop the motor shows.
We will move on from there. We'll move on from that very glamorous virtual garage to our own much more physical one. And Tom, you've nominated a car that you've had experience with in different forms recently. Please fill us in.
I think I'm on my fourth Subaru XV for this year now. I had two at the beginning of the year and I've had two now. So I've driven the top spec. I've driven the hybrid top spec as well.
Perfect.
And I've now driven the premium, which is sort of at the lower end of the mid spec. So there's two mid specs and it's like the lower one. But I actually quite like the XV and I've always liked it, even though we all know that the engine leaves a lot to be desired. And sadly that continues to be true for the hybrid. I just think it's capable. It's sort of nice to drive. Like, it's comfortable. The interior quality is really good. The interior design is really good. The multimedia is really good. And as long as you avoid the base model, the safety is all standard. So it's a nice little SUV to drive. And I think it makes a lot of sense for a lot of Australians. And that's, I think, the case for a lot of Subarus, really. Right. I don't know. Do you agree?
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, word association for me with XV is kind of breathless. That it's not, and that's sort of hung around with the XV for some time. But the point that interests me is, what difference have you noticed between the hybrid and non-hybrid in terms of fuel economy? Is it dramatic? Is it, you know, a big difference or not?
It's not nothing. I'll put it that way. The hybrid will save fuel compared to a normal one, or even a rival that uses a naturally aspirated 2-liter engine. So it's not as though it doesn't save fuel, but the I think the real hurdle for that car is the fact that the Corolla really, really saves fuel. Like a rival like that, a proper full on, you know, Toyota hybrid will save a lot more fuel to the point where it's like half, right? Like a Corolla, you can get it down to almost half in the hybrid what you can in the 2-liter. I think the hybrid doesn't really make up its price differential. It's a little bit nicer to drive just because it has that smooth kind of little bit of electric torque when you get going. And I've noticed it's a little bit quieter in the cabin as well, because the engine perhaps doesn't have to try quite as hard as it does in the 2-liter version. But you know, it doesn't make sense on the maths, I think, but that doesn't make it any less sort of, you know, nice to drive. And it's, I suppose, a worthy entrant into the XV range.
Cool. Have you had any recent XV experience, Byron?
Yes, I recently did an Urban Guide review for us in that car. And I completely agree with Tom's assessment. With the facelift, which came out late last year, they did add a bit more refinement to the car, a bit more sound deadening, and I think they softened or changed the suspension to, so it'd be a little bit more supple. I completely concur that the car needs just a bit more oomph, but I also thought that it rode too stiffly in the past. So the minor changes they made to the suspension, plus just a little bit more electric torque assistance, has, in my mind, improve the car greatly.
Great, very good.
I love the looks. I mean, that car is another car that sells on design, I reckon. People love the look, they love the shape and the reputation. I just wish it had a turbo.
I think the shape, it makes so much sense, right? Because it's just an attractive hatchback that's been lifted up, and that's the sort of the genius of Subaru's whole range, is that they don't build SUVs, even though they're a really successful SUV builder. They build like wagons that have been lifted and a hatchback that's been lifted. It's sort of that kind of traditional, for people who are looking for that really practical body shell, they get the all-wheel drive, they get all the safety, and they look good. So,
I think it's not to be underestimated either, that people probably, when they're doing their shopping, they've got their list. I need one that's economical, and it's got to be safe, and I want the servicing to be, you know, really affordable. Then they go in the showroom, oh, I love that. That looks great. You can't kind of take the emotion out of the equation. Yeah. That people aren't drawn towards buying an ugly car. They want a car that is appealing. Visually, so it's an emotional purchase, and that is a big ace up the XV sleeve.
Mm.
Yeah, I think so too. I was talking to Subaru about the colors as well. Yeah, the XV is just available in all sorts of like wacky and wonderful colors. They said it's just like that like where we market that car. You know, just, you know, younger people or people who are looking for something more fun and adventurous, they want those colors. Whereas you get to something like the Outback, and it's available in like five shades of gray, and that's it. You know,
it's silver, like, black. Charcoal.
Now,
that's good. Cool. Thank you, Tom. Byron, we will swap to your good self, and we're going to extract one from your automotive portfolio. You do have a substantial collection of vehicles. Please bring us up to speed with one of your more recent acquisitions.
Thank you. During the prolonged lockdown here in Melbourne, it gave me a ample time to peruse the burgeoning used car market, and I think I got in just in time with my 1996 Mazda BA Astina. So this is a car that pretty much broke Mazda in the early 1990s when it was released in 1993. It was meant to be a premium, some say it was meant to wear the Amati luxury brand badge that that was going to be Mazda's take on the Lexus back in the day.
Yep.
That was abandoned at the 11th hour.
Yeah. Anyway,
so the Mazda Stena was meant to be pretty much a proto Audi A3 slash Mercedes A-Class style compact luxury hatch with a performance edge. And to that end, they got a Porsche, an ex-Porsche designer who had a hand in cars like the 928 and 944, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of thing really appeals to me. If you look at the, you know, particularly the silhouette and the nose of the this particular car, which was known as a 323F in other markets, as well as I've forgotten what the other name of the car was. But anyway, it's purely
Lantus.
That's right. Thank you. Yes, the Mazda Lantus. I think its design has really held up well. It's actually not built on the 323 familiar platform, which most people, including me, thought was the case. It's based on a now defunct platform that that underpinned the Unos 500, which I'm certain you might recall was that was BMW 3 Series rivaling effort from Mazda back in the early 90s. This was meant to be, it used some of its engine technology and certainly its platform and its suspension. And anyway, nowadays it's a bit of a curio, but I think it's going to be one of those sleeper cars that people will start collecting. And, you know, as Mazda's prominence in Australia continues to be solidified, I think people will become, you know, cognizant of what this car represented and what it meant for a brand that overinvested, became part of Ford, broke away, and is now again.
To me, it's a car that's like at the top of one of the hills in the roller coaster ride that is Mazda. If Mazda was a person, it'd be this almost bipolar kind of, I'm so enthusiastic today, I'm just on fire. And they would go up to this massive peak of design extremity and getting really bold and then, oh my God, you know, we're losing money hand over fist and we've got to be more conservative. And then, oh, we're getting some money in the bank. Oh, we're going to go very, very exciting again. And it was one of those cars. It was on a peak.
Absolutely. Mine's the 1.8 four-cylinder petrol engine. There was also a 2-litre V6.
So there was.
Which kind of gives away the Unos 500 connection, because that also had a small...
It was in the 30X as well, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah. Although, weirdly, the 30X was not based on that platform. So that massive proliferation. And finally, on this car, you may recall, not only was there a lift back like my car, but there was also the hard top.
Which looked great.
Oh, yeah. They're really cool. Terribly space inefficient. And you will recall this because you were a motoring journalist during this time as well, James, that the car was not really much more than a 2+2-seater, really.
No, I lost out on that. Styling won the day, form over function.
But, but to finish off with that particular car, I've parked in such a way that I see it every morning when I open the front door and I just drink in those design details. I think it's one of those underrated classics that I think is on the verge of becoming something special.
Fantastic. Good. Well, we'll watch that space and see if you've made a, you know, it'll be your superannuation, Byron, obviously. I'll chip in quickly on a couple of different points. I've been driving the Merc AMG GLB35. So it's that 2-litre turbo 4, 225 kilowatts, 400 newton metres, which is close to the first A45 in terms of outputs and what have you. 8-speed dual clutch, all-wheel drive, just under $90,000 before you put it on the road. And I really am drawn to that whole A35, CLA35 as a distinct model all of its own. Not the full house fire breathing, but has some performance edge to it. It's quick, 0 to 100, 5.2 seconds, and really has a very strong mid-range. The interior is beautiful, that widescreen cockpit I love in Mercs. I'm a fan, I know some people aren't. It steers nicely, it's well-equipped. It's very thoughtful, 7-seater. And there are USBs everywhere, that kind of thing, just thinking about the people that are going to use it. But in this car, in the GLB, I didn't find it as refined as I'd like it to be. The pickup from step off was not as fast and it wasn't particularly smooth. And even in gear, the power delivery is non-linear. It's almost patchy. You get a bit of rollback too on the dual clutch. Things that you could become very annoying over time. It's 1.8 tons. So for a relatively small car, that's a fair bit. You've got the ride control damping, but it's just a bit bumpy running on 20s, 20-inch rims with some surprisingly high-performance Michelin Pilot 4, Pilot Sport 4s on it. I'm just not as convinced of the 35 scenario in this package, which is odd because I thought it would be just as enjoyable as the others. But it wasn't horrible, don't get me wrong, but it just wasn't quite as convincing.
Do you think it makes some concessions to the fact that it's like the GLB is more of a practicality-based vehicle, yeah, and they haven't sort of gone into it from the perspective of, oh, yeah, we're going to make it a total firecracker, right?
Yeah, it's as if, this sounds very disrespectful, but it's if it's not finished. I think it needed a little more, just a little more development time in this particular body. That's just my take on it.
I think it looks great.
Oh, it's a great-looking car. It's a great
look. When they released the first pictures of it, I mean, we also crowded around the computer in the office and thought, oh, I don't know. It's a bit awkward. And then you see one in real life and it looks fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. But look, I want to skip on to the second part of In Our Garage for mine, because Fearless Leader Mal and I went to the Sydney Harbour Concours d'Elegance last night, and there were some amazing cars there. We were guests of McLaren and they showed their Elva show car, which is that open top roadster style thing. Incredible. Jack Brabham's 1966 championship winning Repco Brabham BT19 was there. Like a multi million dollar thing. Countach's 911s, Mercs, Rollers, Jags. But the thing that absolutely caught my imagination was a Sydney County Council EH van recreation. It absolutely took the cake. This thing was perfect. So it's so beautiful. It's finished in a colour called Silver Pine Green, which was exclusive to Sydney County Council. It's sign written with their in-period positioning, which is Live Better Electrically. And the person who undertook the restoration of this van got in touch with the current New South Wales energy provider, which I think is AGL or Energy Australia, one of those. And they actually have an archive. And they had all of this equipment that would typically be in one of these vans, and they gave it to him. He's got the fitment on the roof for a ladder, and the ladder is an original Sydney County Council ladder. And it's just the most beautiful car. He's created it as what he would see as a rapid response vehicle. So he's got a 179 with, twin carbs on it. He's lowered a little bit. So it's his vision of what would be, look, it's an emergency. We need to get the rapid response car out there. And I couldn't take my eyes off it. Surrounded by all of these amazing cars, this is the one that absolutely caught my attention. It was,
I'm with you with that sort of thing, that sort of reimagining of something that you saw a lot when you were younger, or you just caught your eye, that sort of thing is I'm right with you there. Did you put a bit on it or something?
He owns many Holdens, and he's done other things, like he has a Dodge van that's also in Sydney County Council electricity kind of colors. He's got a theme going. And he was a very, very nice guy. And the car is a tribute to him. It's absolutely perfect. It's a beautiful recreation. The back of it, even the wooden kind of cabinetry in the back that holds all of these various bits and pieces, that came from the archive as well. And he put it into the car. Really exceptional. Anyway, for people on YouTube, there'll be a picture of it and you can see what we're talking about.
Yeah. Someone that had a Chimera, very similar to that color, that was also a New South Wales government green, yeah, and in a wagon, and I wish I bought it. I was just, it's one of my regrets. So I'm right with you there, brother.
Mal thought it was saltbush green, like his EH, but it's this silver pine green, which was exclusive to the Sydney County Council. And the Sydney County Council head office was right near the Pagewood plant in Sydney. So various components, like I think he said the chassis came from Adelaide, and then all these things were brought together and the car was assembled and just delivered. The build plate has a special code that says the car is a Sydney County Council car. That's how close the relationship was.
I'm not surprised Mal thought that, because he probably had Nutbush city limits in his head and he thought saltbush. You know what he's like. He just goes on a tangent, and that's why we love him.
Now we'll move on and quickly cover off some feedback that we had on last week's show, and that was all about the Ram 1500 TRX, or T-Rex, as it's increasingly becoming known. And our old mate Lofty Visions, and I hope Lofty Jr. is doing well. Lofty, he says, "Meh, great tow vehicle, but just screams massive bell end. I'd be embarrassed driving that monstrosity." So he's made his thoughts very, very clear.
Are you allowed to say that on this podcast? Yeah.
Bell end. But on the other side of the coin, Raucus 919 says, "Oh, no. He's actually with Lofty. I beg your pardon. TRX at $180,000 versus Land Cruiser 200 Ute chopped at $180,000. The market is out there." So he's saying that there are a lot of people spending big money on customizing their Land Cruisers and other kind of commercial type vehicles. So he's all for it. And as does Eddie Fuentes, he says, "Yeah, TRX, yes, please. Awesome tow vehicle, etc." TGV says, the very fast train. Lol, the TRX. That said, it is a tip of the hat to Ford, since Ford had that factory performance truck market all to itself since 2010. Just wait for the F-150 Raptor R. And I wasn't aware of the F-150 Raptor R, but did a bit of digging. It's going to be potentially a supercharged 5.2-litre V8 from the Mustang Shelby GT500. So this thing will be 567 kilowatts, which is 760 horsepower.
Wow. And that deserves the TRX name, James and Thomas. And as you know where I'm going with this, don't you? I mean, you know, greats like the Bluebird TRX.
Bluebird TRX.
Yeah.
Pintara.
Not the Pintara. Something tells me, though, that you would rather have a Defender V8 for that money.
Defender V8, absolutely. Yeah. But TGV makes the valid point that he thinks that the GMC Hummer EV will actually make the Raptor and TRX extinct, as they have been previously. So that's a fair point. But he doesn't think that Cybertruck stands a chance of passing Australian ADRs, and you've got to agree with him on that. Now, the other thing was, Stuart Mahler got in touch, and it was in reference to a comment that was made the previous week about the WRX, and CIM crew had said, "Look, finally the WRX matches the 1996 Evo 4 in power," and that was because Subaru is gunning for the little AMGs with, you know, around 300 kilowatts. And I'd made the rookie error of saying that the Evo 4 was 206 kilowatts, forgetting that, of course, that number was part of the Japanese gentleman's agreement, where a power figure no higher than 206 kilowatts was going to be advertised. And cars like the GTR, for example, fell into that basket. And
the NSX as well.
I think. NSX. All of a sudden, they were developing 206 kilowatts.
Oh, yeah.
He makes the valid point, Stuart makes the valid point, that the Evo 4 probably had closer to 300 kilowatts. So thank you very much for pulling me up on that, Stuart. And just to round it out, Hammer Rock said, "Did you guys piss off YouTube or something? For some reason, your videos, new or old, are no longer showing under my subscriptions view, or is it just me?" And look, we do have a current a kind of a problem with YouTube in terms of the way our videos are being served. So you're absolutely right. So to anybody watching on YouTube on this one, thank you doubly for tuning in, because you've managed to find us. So thank you very much.
Send donations to James Cleary's.
But we're going to get it sorted. We're going to get it sorted.
I'm kidding. Don't send any donations.
As quickly as we can. But right now, for many, the most significant part of our podcast, Must Watch. Now, this is very interesting. Elon was on Twitter, And he said, creating the city of Starbase, Texas. He's moved all of the various things to Texas. You know, because of course he's going to call a city Starbase. And he says, and thence to Mars and hence the stars and all that kind of stuff. But Jim Hall in one of the comments said, Elon, can we do something about the lack of full self-driving in these rat cars? And I thought, what on earth is this? And it's now this, had a video that is these rats learned how to drive tiny cars made out of plastic bottles and were less stressed as a result. And for people on YouTube, you'll be able to see vision of these rats steering little cars. 17 rats, University of Richmond in Virginia. They had an aluminium floor, copper wires on the front for a steering wheel. So as they pressed on these different wires, it steered and went forward, and rewarded for driving the cars with Fruit Loops. So there was a massive reward involved in the training. They examined the rats' poop for two hormones associated with stress, corticosterone, which is a marker of stress, and DHEA, which is a buffer that counteracts stress. And training to drive made the rats less stressed. And compared to rats in another study that were passengers in a remote control car, the driving rats in the study were less stressed. So you have greater control over your environment, delivers this self-efficacy or agency in humans, and rat brains are an appropriate model for human brains, according to these scientists, white coat boffins. So, you know, autonomous driving may actually stress us out because we're lacking control. And I think Elon does need to get that in hand. I don't know what you guys make of that.
That's what I think. Can you see what I'm holding up?
Yeah.
What have you got? Free. You're blurring into your background a little bit. What does it say?
Free the Elon rats.
Oh my God, Elon's control. There you go.
Free the Elon rats. Thank you very much. Thank you.
That's what I think.
Why? They're enjoying driving on their little test circuit.
It's amazing. Yeah,
I suppose if you enjoy your prisoner.
They're a lot better than some
something
people
in there about this dystopian future that we live in.
He's better than certain people I've seen in the Westfield car park, I must tell you.
I've also seen a video. Someone taught, I think it was like one or two dogs to drive, and they had them on a little test course, and it's like a little terrier with a big moustache.
That is
like
the most genius thing. It was a New Zealand campaign to encourage people to adopt dogs rather than buying a pup from a breeder, and to show how brilliant these pound dogs were. They taught them to drive. So they taught them to drive minis, and the adoption rate for dogs from the pound went through the roof. It was just the most charming thing. So I might get some footage of that, and we'll see if we can put that up as well. But
just turning to my dog, are you listening, Lana?
Lana?
Yep. You're going to jump in that Mazda Estina and learn to drive.
Get out of here. The other thing is, through the week, Elon achieved a pretty amazing thing, and he tweeted, Starship SN10 landed in one piece. So this was actually SpaceX doing a high altitude flight test on this Starship, which is going to allegedly go to the moon and then onto Mars and all this kind of stuff. It was about 14 minutes, and it was actually amazing to me anyway. I seriously thought the landing footage particularly was CGI, but it was real. And this thing put itself and parked itself back on the ground after going up to high altitude. And then a few minutes later, of course, it did blow up in spectacular fashion. But I thought it was amazing. Although Bud, who commented on Twitter, said, would be nice if all the world's billionaires banded together, put their egos aside, and helped solve a lot of Earth's problems before firing rockets into space. So that's like a slap on the hand for you, Jeff Bezos and Elon doing all their space stuff. Yeah, it was particularly spectacular, I thought.
How prescient for you to say that, James, with David Bowie here, the Starman himself.
The Starman! And the Starman in Elon's Roadster, I think that was playing on loop for as long as it could when he rocketed his car off into the cosmos. So a very apt connection, you're absolutely right. But the Tesla share price, it is once again down $89. It's $653.20. It was $742 last week. And that, as I say, the fourth week running. Now, the Motley Fool says that, yes, it's been hard hit. It fell 4.8%. But that's primarily because the whole market is moving down, but it weighs heavily on volatile stocks like Tesla. So it's been hit a little harder than you might think, but that's been a really strong trend recently, that the heat has come off the Tesla share price. So there you go. And with that, I think we have reached the finish line. And I want to say thank you, Byron.
Thank you. I love being here. So,
and thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Good. And thank you to our in-house bred scientist, bride kidnapping expert, and corporate exorcist, Mr. Pritchard, for his incredible work on the buttons and sliders. Today, he's wearing a T-shirt saying, "This is Bob. Bob has no arms. Knock, knock. Who is it? It isn't Bob." Bubbling beer shorts and underpants gloves. I think they're actually Y fronts on both hands. It's an arresting ensemble. Let us know your thoughts. You can find Cars Guide on Facebook and Instagram, or email us at comments@carsguide.com.au. If you're an Apple Podcast listener, please rate and review us. Remember, you can also watch us on YouTube. And if you are already, make sure you subscribe to the Cars Guide YouTube channel, niggles notwithstanding, so you can stay on top of all our latest content. But before we go, mate of mine was pulled over during the week. Cop says, "Look, you're wandering out of your lane, so I need you to blow into this breathalyzer tube." Old mate says, "Sorry, officer, I can't do that. I'm an asthmatic and I'd be risking a severe asthma attack." "Okay, fine. I'll have you transferred to the station for a blood test." I have to refuse that as well, I'm afraid, because I'm a haemophiliac. If I do that, I may bleed to death." "Well, then we'll take a urine sample." I'm sorry, officer, I can't do that either. I'm also a diabetic. I know if I do that at this time of day, my blood sugar will likely drop to a dangerously low level." All right, then, I need you to step out of the vehicle so I can conduct a motor skills test." I can't do that either, officer." "Why not?" "Because I'm drunk."